This is World Travelers Today's podcast, session number one. Hey everyone, welcome to World Travelers Today's first podcast. Thanks so much for joining us, and we are fascinated to have our first guest, which is going to be Jim Sutton. Jim has traveled the world for both business and pleasure. He's a former FBI special agent and U.S. government intelligence analyst, and he's also worked for many corporations around the world providing safety and security for many employees of that company, and he's here to talk to us about travel security. Or the new normal, as many call it, about how to keep yourself safe. Jim's going to share with us some pointers, some key steps. He's also going to mention about our travel security training that's going to be released on July 8th. So without further ado, here's my interview with Jim Sutton. Hey, everyone. I'm Sam Garza. Welcome to World Travelers Today podcast. I'm happy to introduce Jim Sutton. Jim, thanks so much for joining the show, and welcome.
Sam, thank you very much for the invitation. It's a pleasure to talk to you.
Great. Jim, share a little bit about yourself. Share your expertise with our audience of travel security and also transportation security. What are you best known for? And share a little bit about that.
By way of background, I was born in Mexico City, but I was raised in the United States. So I really consider myself more American than anything else. But I have spent a substantial amount of my life traveling throughout Europe, Latin America, and every single country in Latin America, from Mexico to Argentina. And also lived for several years in Spain and traveled into Germany, into Scandinavia, Italy, and some of the other European countries.
Fantastic. And while working and traveling, you know, how did you develop your skill set in security and intelligence? Was it mainly federal jobs or also other corporate jobs that you had, or was it a mix of both?
It was actually a mix of all of them. After the military, like many young men in my period, I joined law enforcement in Sacramento, California, and spent almost 10 years with a metropolitan department in California, the Sacramento County Sheriff's Office.
Right.
At a very interesting time, I actually had a chance to work some of the cases, and I'm going to date myself, back from the 60s and 70s, such as the Patty Hearst kidnapping, the Symbionese Liberation Army, and some of the bombings against the California infrastructure. From there, I went to the California Bureau of Narcotics Enforcement, and I was assigned to the LA office, which gave me a chance to work drug trafficking for several years. After that, I moved on to the FBI and became a special agent for the FBI and had a chance to work all kinds of cases, from crimes in Indian Reservation to counterintelligence and counterterrorism in San Juan, Puerto Rico. From there, I went into the private sector, and I was the head of security for ITT Corporation initially, then Chase Manhattan Bank, and finally for Sears Roebuck, responsible for all the Western Hemisphere operations. That gave me a chance. All this occupations gave me a chance not only to advise fellow agents and fellow policemen that were traveling on vacations or in business, but also to do briefings for executives, including the chairman of the board of the corporations I was working for, that was taking the private jet either to Europe, to Africa, to Latin America. Right. So it really gave me an opportunity to focus and spend a lot of my effort discussing travel security.
Fascinating. And as you know, we have a working background together on multiple projects with Homeland Security and other federal agencies. So, we're blessed to have you know, as a contributor to World Travelers Today. So our main focus, and thanks again for sharing your background, of course, is this new normal for travelers around the world, whether they're traveling domestically here in the United States or traveling overseas. There seems to be a new threat level of concern, let's say, for example, in places where some people thought were safe, but I think some other people like yourself with a more knowledgeable background know that Europe wasn't, especially Western Europe, wasn't entirely safe from terrorism in the past. But that being said, what do you think is the overall situation for travel security currently throughout the world?
You know, Sam, this is, I've always said that the devil is in details and God is in the balance.
Right.
You know, on one hand, we want to travel. We are programmed, us human beings, to travel. We want to explore. We want to learn. We want to visit. We want to see. So travel has been with us since the beginning of humanity.
Right.
So while it may sound trite to call it the new normal, you know, there isn't a day where you don't open the newspapers or watch CNN or MSNBC or Fox that you don't hear about some event that has taken place somewhere in the world that involves act of terrorism.
Right.
Which is really, in my mind, it's important. Yes, we have to confront terrorism, but terrorism is highly unpredictable because it's motivated by ideology,
right,
either ethnic, religious, or political. But the fact is, since time, you know, since the beginning of recorded history, travelers have always been the victims of crime.
Right. And we're going to get into that. And I think that follows up to my next question of, should travelers be more concerned with ISIS or other terrorist organizations or the pickpocket guy at the airport and Charles de Gaulle? You know, I would think it would be the criminal aspect, but I'll let you go ahead and share your thoughts on that.
And the answer to your question, Sam, is yes.
The criminal aspect.
No, I would tell you, if you look at threats, if you look at reported insurance events, you know, what kind of claims have been made?
Right.
I kind of developed this little model of priorities of what to protect yourself against. Number one is what I call normal accidents. You know, boats will sink, planes will crash.
Right.
It happens with some frequency, but we live in a very complex world and we rely on complex systems, and inevitably some of the systems fail. We don't know how they're going to fail, but they do fail.
Right. Like all of us take a chance when we get on that plane that, you know, that everyone in that airline did their job to ensure that I get from point A to point B safely. But again, those are things that are out of your control.
Exactly. And the second element that is outside of your control is natural events.
Correct.
Earthquakes, tsunamis, epidemics. All types of activity that are natural, floods, volcano explosions, but they're of such scope and magnitude that it is impossible to protect against them or even anticipate them. And right, all you can do is have a good plan that if you find yourself in a location where you have one of these natural incidents, that you know how to react and how to save yourself and your family from being a victim of the event.
Right.
Number three is criminal activity. It happens all over the world. It happens on a daily basis. I mean, you can go to Russia, you can go to China, you can go to any country in the world. And criminal activity is going to be by far the most common instance and the most common contingency that you're going to confront.
Correct.
So preparing yourself for this, probably the most likely event you will confront in any place in the world at any time, in any given day, is very, very important. And the fourth and the least probable of all events is being a victim of a terrorist incident.
Right, right.
They happen, but they happen infrequently.
Mm-hmm.
So statistically, you're going to confront, you know, a normal accident, a natural event, or criminal activity statistically far more often than a criminal event. But yet, in our risk assessment as humans, we tend to focus more on the notable.
Right.
So the least probable event you will confront is a terrorist incident.
Well, that's interesting because, you know, just this weekend, you know, yesterday, I received an email from a friend traveling to Spain for about a week, you know, trying to get some for me to, you know, give them some proposals of what to do. But their number one concern was, is Spain safe from terrorism? And I'm thinking, well, no one is 100%, terrorism-free. For example, you know, you have ETA, you have other groups inside Spain that are not necessarily associated with what we're reading in the news. But, you know, I reminded her of the criminal element, that she should be more prepared for, careful with this area in Barcelona, or be careful with this neighborhood in Madrid. You know, just keep your you know, stay alert, for example. But right away it went to the terrorist, you know, attacks, I guess, from the past. And was Spain safe from this? So I think what you're saying makes a lot of sense. But I think there's a misunderstanding, a misconception. And why do you think that is, Jim? Why are a lot of travelers more concerned, and whether they be seasoned travelers or new travelers, is it the media that embeds this in us, or is it just because of the effect and the massive scale of when it does happen, it leaves an impression? Not too many people, you know, in other words, pickpockets or scams are not going to make international news.
You know, for that, I'll take you back into history. There was an American journalist last century by the name of Mencken who said very notably and memorably, what bleeds, leads. Mm-hmm. You know, as humans, we're more concerned about infrequent, improbable incidents, a bomb attack, a massive, you know, assault where a lot of people are killed.
Right.
That attracts our attention more than the more common. We tend to blind ourselves to the common. But, you know, you made a great point. And the fact, and I, you know, mentioned it earlier about the devil being on the details, but God being on the balance, that developing, first of all, a calibrated judgment. That means in every activity in your life, you have to make a cost-benefit analysis.
Right.
What am I doing and what are going to be the results? Because I would tell you that more humans get killed or hurt from doing things that they can control. I'm going to jump off this high bridge because I can swim and I'm really great.
Right.
And no problem, not realizing that I'm going to jump into a creek that's only 3 or 4 feet deep and I'm going to hurt myself seriously by taking a risk. That before we take any risk, we balance what is the benefit I'm going to get from this activity and what is the cost, both mm-hmm. in terms of the threat I'm going to confront and the consequences of taking that action. If the cost benefit is not there, don't do it.
Right. So, and that leads us to, you know, what I call be a smart traveler, a better informed or well-informed traveler. For example, you know, there was an idea of some, you know, I met with some people about a year ago that just simply couldn't comprehend that, you know, after the first terrorist attack on that newspaper there in Paris, of how this could happen in Paris. Paris is Paris. And just from a, you know, historical perspective, there have been several incidences in Paris of terrorist attacks or you know, other things that were, you know, newsworthy.
Listen, I've been in and out of Paris and in and out of France several times. And right. The same thing in Barcelona and the same thing in Madrid and the same thing in Extremadura and London. And here you have a case that these people were focused on the notable and right. not on the most probable. The most probable, when I was a kid and went to France, is my mother would always clutch her purse. Why? Right. Because Paris, like any other urban zone in the world, New York, Atlanta, Mexico City, Buenos Aires, the biggest problem is going to be somebody ripping off your purse right. or your gold medal or your Rolex watch. Because, you know, even criminals make a cost-benefit analysis.
Right.
Before they attack somebody, they ask themselves, what is the risk and what is the reward?
Correct.
So what you want to do is to create a certain aura around you that you are not an easy target. And correct. You want to convey a message to the criminal, don't mess with me. I right. know what's going on.
And we're
going
to get into that here, you know, with some other questions on, you know, some practical steps for a traveler, how they can travel just a little bit more safely, things that they can do that they can take control of. But we're going to get to that. I want to kind of go back a little bit to maybe just the terrors element of travel and, you know, our experience with transportation infrastructure. Why do transportation systems continue to be soft targets throughout the world, and how do terrorist organizations exploit them?
An excellent question, Sam. The recent travel conveyances, whether you go by ship, whether you go by plane, or whether you go by train or a bus,
right,
is that they include a lot of people in a situation in which the people traveling do not have control over the infrastructure. Every time you get into a plane, you're taking a calculated risk. Every time you get into a train, into a ship, into any type of conveyance, even a suburban bus, you're taking a calculated risk, because you can control what's going immediately around you, but you cannot control how others perceive that conveyance in terms of target value.
Right.
And if I attack a plane, it's going to be very easy for me to control that plane just by making threats or pulling out a gun and really create an untenable situation. The same thing for a bus and the same thing for a ship. I traveled to Colombia by bus for a long, long time. And let me tell you, every time I got into the bus and went to Bucaramanga or went to Los Llanos Orientales, I always realized that, gee, I do not have 100% confront, 100% control of where I am.
Right.
But I have 100% control over myself. Mm-hmm. And if I see something or hear something that concerns me, I'm going to listen to my intuition. I'm going to get off that bus. It's more important to trust your intuition than to.
Would you say, Jim, that they target these systems of transportation because, of course, they're soft, but at what point they target them because they can, they're, like you said, the criminal element, they're gonna calculate the risks. For example, 9/11, they actually got into the planes and used the plane, and it seems in Brussels in the most recent attack they realized that risk or the wall to get into that area now is not worth it. So let's go after the soft target, which would be inside the airport before you get to security. That seems to be like a new, approach or attack point. Where will the feds, for example, with our experience, where will the layer of security expand to, and how is that calculated? I mean, are we going to start seeing, security of outside the airport that you can't even enter unless you have a ticket? Do you think that's where we're headed?
Eventually, yes. And all these preparations are inconveniences. But, going back to 9/11, as I was working as an intelligence analyst for the U.S. government before 9/11, and I was on the ground, actually within a government agency when 9/11 happened. Mm-hmm. And one of the lessons from that is that there was a lot of companies prepared for Y2K. Remember, at the end of the century, the world was going to go to heck and nothing will work. Your ATM wouldn't work. Your phone wouldn't work. And people went out and bought hundreds of bottles of water and made all kinds of preparations, including corporations. And 9/11 happened. But those companies, largely in the financial sector, that had prepared for Y2K, the anticipated catastrophe. When the unanticipated catastrophe happened on September the 11th of 2001, those that had the operating discipline were able to resume their operations within hours or days after the attack of 9/11 and the destruction of the World Trade Center. Mm-hmm. So the takeaway lesson from 9/11 is that if you prepare for the anticipated contingency from what you think is going to happen, when the unexpected happens, you're well prepared to deal with it.
Right, because you can just, mindset shifts and you're good to go. Now, that being said, you feel like, okay, the layers of security are going to be expanded, and that that's probably coming just due to the fact of that we already have cases of them targeting these groups, saying them, you know, the airport before you even get into the security area. Now, what can a traveler do, Jim? And let's get more now into the personal protection discipline. You know, I've talked to a lot of people over the past months who feel, you know, there's just nothing I can do. You know, whatever is going to happen is going to happen. I love traveling. I'm going to travel anyway, but there's really nothing that I can do. Now, I completely disagree with that. I'm not saying that we're trying to encourage, you know, intelligence people to become intelligence agents or James Bond. That's not what we're talking about here. I just feel that there are certain measures that I take that I feel that I can protect myself or put myself in a situation where I have more control. As you mentioned earlier, if something happens, I know what to do. For example, I was talking to you earlier that I was just recently in New York City with a friend, and my friend wanted to use a metro, and of course, I'm always open to do things, but that morning, several men were arrested with multiple weapons coming through one of the tunnels, stopped, I believe, by NYPD, and just reading that, of course, triggered multiple things from my past or experiences that told me, you know what, I'm not going to take the metro today, I'll just cab, I have more control in a cab, or I'll walk. I'm more mobile, I have multiple, exit routes while walking as compared to being stuck in the metro. Now, what do you feel the first step a traveler can do for personal protection, you know, while abroad or on a business trip?
Listen, you make two points. You know, I had a chance to interview a lot of people that were kidnapped in Latin America and in Africa and other places. Mm-hmm. And every single one of them pointed out to me that they had a bad feeling about what was going on.
Interesting. Like a gut feeling, maybe.
Exactly. And the human mind is a wonderful thing. Mm-hmm. You know, I spend a lot of time in Italy. And the other day, I was walking down the street because I like to walk a lot, you know.
Right. Well,
give me
good.
A city. I just go out there and walk and walk and walk and walk. And I started listening to an Italian song from my youth by Mondungo called Volare. And I said, interesting, why should I remember that song today, now? I just kind of ignored it, kept on walking, and about two blocks later, as I walked into a house with the windows open, I hear this very same song. I used to listen to it as a kid in Rome, Volare.
Mm-hmm. I think they call that an event echo.
Yeah, yes. Yeah. Well, yes. So here you have the mind, a lot of times will tell you things that you're not specifically aware.
Right.
But they happen, and then they kind of surprise you, like expecting a call from somebody. So a lot of times, you know, we're not completely aware of all the capabilities our mind has. And there's substantial research that tells you a lot of times your mind has awareness of something that's going to happen without you knowing it's going to happen. Mm-hmm. And you also refer to what I call the Hakuna Matata attitude.
Right.
No problems, no worries, nothing is going to happen. And really, nothing can be more dangerous than to believe that you're beyond the laws of nature, that nothing will happen to you because your discipline will be way, way down and you will not pay attention to what your mind is telling you. And once something bad happens, then you run out of time and you must react under stress, under an emergency. And what these recommendations that we're going to talk about and what the training accomplishes is that it gives you time to make a cold, calculated decision that is going to keep you from a bad situation.
Well, great. I'm glad you mentioned the training. You know, we worked on that, you know, just putting together our past experiences together and then your in-depth knowledge of you know, threat levels, whether it be from the criminal activity or, as you say, transportation systems or the terrorist groups. So step one for personal protection discipline, you know, is stay constantly alert, correct?
So completely.
If you travel just because you're in Paris or just because you've been there multiple times, doesn't mean that you can put your guard down. Is that correct?
You know, that's correct, Sam. And in addition to traveling as a tourist all over the world, I also had a chance for a couple of deployments, one to Baghdad mm-hmm. and the other one to Kabul. So not only some of these lessons were not only learned while being a tourist right. or while protecting the president of a corporation, but were also learned on war zones, mm-hmm. including Mexico City and Guatemala and Buenos Aires and Cali, Colombia. So I was able to balance both. And I can tell you, bar none, wherever you go in the world, the number one, the most important thing you can do as a traveler is to stay alert.
Right.
Because, you know, when the criminal is making his cost-benefit analysis, if you look lost, if you look stressed, if you look distracted, if you're not paying attention to your surroundings, you make yourself an easy target.
Great. And what would you say number two would be, Jim?
Well, number two is know where you're at.
Exactly.
And, you know, the takeaway from that mm-hmm. is that very often, more often than not, and, you know, if the listeners think about it, how you react to an emergency largely dictates whether that emergency becomes a catastrophe or whether it was manageable, it was an event, it was a close call, or you managed to get out of harm's way early enough. So the initial stages, how you respond, pretty much determine the outcome of the incident.
Excellent. What would be step number three?
Have a plan. Mm-hmm. What am I going to do if, you know, and we humans are interesting creatures. Whether you go on a date, whether you pick a mate, whether you go on a trip, whether you go on an adventure, you always said, well, I'm going to go on this date. How will he or she is going to respond to my personality, to my conversation?
So practice situational awareness. In other words, have a plan, you know.
Well, yes. You know, and remember what I was telling you about these corporations that weren't impacted by 9/11.
Correct.
The ones that had a plan in place were able to respond in a disciplined way. Mm-hmm. You know, step one, step two, step three, we have redundancies, we have backups, we have contingency plans. So I'm able to respond to it. And again, you know, think on your own life. Whether it's a date or it's an adventure, you're always thinking, well, what if? If this happens, what can I do? And, you know, we talk about resiliency.
Right.
But resiliency, if you strip everything just down to the basic science, means that I have a backup plan. So if something unexpected happens, I know immediately where I can back up to, mm-hmm. you know, to my plan. And if that doesn't work, I have a secondary plan. And, you know, the interesting point is that in military discipline, the military spend more time training their personnel how to react to the unexpected.
Right, than something that they know could happen.
Than anything else. And, you know, any kind of training mm-hmm. that is life-saving, from being a doctor to being a soldier to being a policeman, they always drive it the point into you. Have a plan. Know how to react. Practice for an emergency.
Right.
What will you do if something unexpected happens?
And, you know, you've always talked to me about this in the past of, you know, which I think is step four in our training, which not think, but it is to calibrate your intuition to learn from past events. And I think this is something that'll be the first part of our training. We're going to talk to you about how to learn from past events and how to calibrate that. But could you expand on that and tell our audience what that means and what we're trying to convey, not only here, but in our training?
There's no human being, all of your listeners included, that has not had to confront a situation that turned out negatively. Mm-hmm. Hopefully it was just a bad date, a bad meal, a bad trip.
Right.
Or a bad relationship in which, with the comfort of being back home and being safe, and they start thinking about it. And even a lot of the people that were kidnapped in the debriefing process, every single one of them and every single one of your listeners will realize that they had a bad feeling. I didn't feel good about this. Well, how come you didn't back up? Well, I didn't want to disappoint others. I didn't want to look bad in the eyes of my friends or colleagues.
Right.
You know, and if I can strip all this conversation into 2 points, into 3 points, I would tell you, number one, stay alert. Number two, know where you're at. And I don't mean I'm in Paris or I'm in Madrid or I'm in Cali, Colombia or Mexico right. City. It means I know exactly where I'm at. I'm on a bus, I'm on a plane, I'm on a ship, I'm in X place.
Where are my exits? You know, where should I sit in this restaurant? You know, things like that.
Because when I'm aware of where I'm at, I can see options for me to back up. Think of the attack, all the attacks, mm-hmm. both in Paris and in Orlando. The people that were aware knew where the bathrooms were. They knew where the exit doors were. Mm. They knew what was outside. They knew the location. And the ones that trusted their intuition and ran out of the building were the ones you saw on television either being interviewed or helping somebody else.
Mm-hmm. I agree. Like when I enter, especially with traveling, if I enter into a restaurant or a cafe or what have you, I mean, I'll go straight to the bathroom just to figure out domain awareness. What are the exits in this building? Some people might think that's paranoid, but I think just, working with you and in the past and others, it's just something that takes over you of, okay, and then I can go enjoy my coffee because I feel I have a little bit more control of the situation of where I am. And this is, not in my everyday life, but, it's just when I'm traveling, I'm a little bit more alert. So I'm a little bit more active in, understanding my surroundings. I just want to get back quickly now. And those are all four great steps to know where you are at all times. I've encountered a lot of, people during my travels that pride themselves on, well, I don't need a map. I like getting lost, and I was all over the place without a map, and because I have my phone or what have you. And I just feel, and maybe you can expand on this. I hope you can. I always have my phone available. I always buy a SIM card of the country that I'm traveling in, so I can get access to the maps. But that can fail. I could lose access. I could lose connectivity. And I always, like I lived in Madrid in all of 2014, I always had a map of Madrid on me at all times, just in case I needed to take it out. Do you think this is something you would recommend to a lot of travelers out there is to, yeah, that's great to get lost and have fun, but have a map on. Make sure you have a map with you while traveling.
Absolutely. And that's part of knowing where you're at. And it's great to rely on technology, and I love technology, and it's made great strides. However, this is part of being redundant and being safe, that yes, I rely on my smartphone. Yes, I have it available. And you're touching 2 points, knowing what to do. If something happens or I don't feel good about the location, I can pick up a phone and call a friend and let him know where I'm at and what I'm facing. The other one is that that phone, for as advanced as it is, and we all dealt with it, doesn't work reliably 100% of the time.
Right.
So for me to have a map of Mexico City or any place where I'm at is part of knowing where I'm at. I have a plan. I can walk to whatever place. And, one of the analogies I used to make to the military and to executives, one of the most important things you can have is a compass.
Correct.
A compass is
a tool. I carry one with me wherever I go. And not the one in my iPhone, but a physical compass.
Well, yes, because the analogy can be made, even in ethics. The compass tells you the right way to go. You may anticipate all kinds of contingencies on the road, a creek or a drop-off or an impassable area. But if you have a compass, you can adjust your trip and go left, right, or whatever. Mm-hmm. And the compass will always give you true north. The same thing with ethics.
Sound advice.
Well, it's the same thing with ethics. You have, based on experience, you have a feeling of what's the ethical thing to do and what's unethical, what's right and what's wrong. So simple as it may sound, knowing where you're at, having a map, practicing, having some type of fall back into your life, it's very, very important. And they're the things that keep you safe. Right. And they're the things that keep you going back to your loved ones, to your house, to your country, and going back with a great tale of what a wonderful time you had versus going back in crutches or whatever, and telling people what a terrible time you have. And, right. and this happens everywhere. You know, it isn't that going to X country or Y country is more dangerous.
Yeah, nobody. I hear that a lot too. Like, oh, that's a very dangerous place. Well, I mean, it depends. You know, it all depends on your perspective and your you know, what you want to do in that country. But I kind of cringe when I hear things like that, because there are certain, again, things that you can do to ensure, you're a little bit going to be more safe while traveling. So let's do a quick recap, Jim. I think a lot of our travelers, should understand that terrorism does exist, but, we should be maybe a little bit more concerned with things that are outside of control, like the criminal activity, natural disasters. Like, for example, I was stuck in South Africa because, back in the day, I think it was 2010, the volcano in Iceland erupted and there was no air travel across the Atlantic for about a week. So things like that, I feel the traveler should be, you have to prepare for those contingencies that are outside of terrorism,
Absolutely. And you hit the nail on the head. Nowhere in the world, if you walk out of your house today in the middle of Kansas City or Erie, Pennsylvania, you face a lot of the same risks you're going to face in New York or Mexico City or Bogota, Colombia. Right. However, your perception of danger in each one of these places is completely different. But yet, bad incidents happen all over the world.
All over the world.
And they happen on the daily basis.
And I know we're going to have another podcast on traveling to Mexico, because I know you've traveled extensively through that amazing country. But we also kind of want to talk about, outside of the resorts, how a lot of travelers in the United States, not necessarily Europe, feel that Mexico is just not safe. And I'm not going to go because it's unsafe. And I think, that we'll save that for another time. But, in closing, tell us, Jim, what you have coming down your way and what you're up to. And, besides contributing to World Travelers Today, what else do you have going on?
But, Sam, before you let me go, you raise a very important point. And number one is that this type of incidents happen all over the world.
Right.
And, remember, I've been in war zones, hot war zones. Mm-hmm. And I had a lot of people say, you're crazy. What do you mean you're going to go to Kabul?
Right.
Or how did you survive Bogota with all the things that happened? And I always went back to the same thing. I have a certain discipline that over the years, it has taught me well and it's kept me alive to ripe old age, which I won't share with your readers. But
you're young, Jim. You're very young.
Only at heart.
There you go. There you go.
But it kept me alive and it kept me safe. And I've had a number of close calls in which I came back and I said to myself, oh, my dear God, how did I get out of that situation? Mm-hmm. And I go back to the very basic disciplines. And I think in the future, we can talk about the specific disciplines. How do they mean? How can you translate them into your daily life? How you can use them wherever you go, even when you're at home, even when you're with family.
Right.
Whenever my wife and I go to a restaurant, she always is very amused that I always want to sit with my back against the wall. Oh, Jim, you're not in Kabul, or, this is not Mexico City.
I do
City.
The same thing, and it's caused some issues with people that I go eat with, but I do the same thing.
Hey, and it isn't that I'm waiting for ISIS or some other group to walk through the front doors. It's just that I want to know what's going on around me.
Right.
I want to see if some drunk guy walks into the restaurant or the store and starts creating a situation that represents a danger to me.
Right.
So we're going to break down specific. What does it mean to stay alert?
Right. Okay. Our training will break it down in more detail for our listeners, so you know that. Please, sign up via email to receive the free training on July 8th. But like Jim said, we're going to definitely, break down each and, every step in the video training coming out soon.
So we'll go into each one, and not only the vernacular, You know, the common thing, but also the technical aspect of what does it mean to stay alert? How do the military train its people who are going into the line of fire to stay alert? What are some of the things specifically that they teach? Not that you have to be a soldier when you go to Jerusalem or Haifa or any other place, but how can you incorporate staying alert in your daily life?
Correct.
Even while driving down the road, having a good compass, you know, knowing where you are. But what does it mean? Tell me exactly.
And we're going to do that.
Yes. And then what kind of a response plan? You know, I don't want to have a contingency plan. I just want a little model that I can remember. What are the 2, 3, 4, 5 steps to having a response plan? And finally, and the takeaway is always, 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 and this is almost a generalization, you got to trust your intuition because it's your accumulated knowledge, your life's knowledge. If you don't trust yourself to stay safe, then you're ignoring Mother Nature, which invests all her effort in keeping you safe, in keeping you from being hurt, and keeping you from having to suffer pain. And the final point to your answer, and I appreciate you asking the question, is that in all these travels around the world, one of the things that always struck me from the Middle East, from Afghanistan to Argentina, is violence against women. And, you know, my father died when I was 2 years old.
Right.
So I witnessed my mother keeping us alive, because I was just a 2-year-old child when he died, of keeping us alive and travel all over the place. And if not with my mother, with my grandparents, I'm really committed to violence against women. And I have developed something I'm calling an NGO, still development, called the Worldwide Observatory of Violence Against Women. Initially, I thought it was a cultural issue. Well, in Mexico, you know, one of the things that stops you from really developing the knowledge is generalization.
Right.
All Mexicans are thieves, or all, you know, people from the Middle East are terrorists, or this kind of people are black, white, or whatever, are criminals. No.
Right.
Ignore the stereotypes. The stereotypes are nothing more than ideas that cloud your mind and cloud your logic.
And create more danger for yourself while abroad or whatever it might be you're doing. I completely agree with that.
Oh, a very topical point, you know. And then in some future conversation, we can go into this one worldwide observatory of violence against women. Take, you know, a case that is topical right now, that a lot of people in England destroyed their best interest by voting on a law that had nothing to do with what they purported to be doing. Keeping America safe, keeping England safe. The pain that the people in Britain will undergo over the next year or 2 or 3 was unnecessary. And a lot of the people that voted for Brexit are now regretting their decision. And what we want to do on some of these recommendations is buyer's remorse. Why didn't I do what my intuition was telling me?
Right. Well,
and why did I allow myself to have some journalist or some expert or some financial analyst tell me something that went against my best interests?
Right. Well, we're definitely, you know, at some links and some data in the podcast below, you know, in the information below the audio file to make sure our viewers and followers have more details to that, Jim. So I want to thank you for your time. This was, you know, excellent information for travelers. I feel that this podcast, along, you know, coupled with the video training that we're going to release on July 8th, is going to be very helpful. And just for clarity, we're not, you know, trying to create any James Bonds out there. We're just definitely trying to give more control to travelers that they can take some steps to ensure they're not insured, but, you know, make themselves more safe and secure while overseas. Jim, thanks again, and I appreciate your time.
Thank you, Mr. Garza. I appreciate your time and, you know, the opportunity to have this conversation with you. And my final point is stay connected.
Correct.
You know, this website is here for your advantage, not for ours. We don't want to sell you anything. However, we want you to be safe. We want you to be able to come back and share your adventure with others. And, you know, we're in the first quarter of the 21st century, mm-hmm. and there's no reason why not to stay connected and log into the website, World Travelers Today, to make sure you have the latest information and the best possible advice.
Excellent. Thanks, Jim. And looking forward to more security posts from you and also the training. And thanks again for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Darsa.
That was my interview with Jim Sutton. Some really solid advice on how to protect yourself, how to prepare yourself for a domestic or international trip. You can learn more about Jim Sutton in our show notes beneath the podcast at worldtravelerstoday.com. You can also learn more about this information, in-depth information, from our free e-learning training that's going to be live on July 8th, 2016. At www.worldtravelerstoday.com. So thanks for listening in, and we'll see you in the next session.